Hello, welcome to This Week in the Atlantic Coast Conference, the podcast for allsportsdiscussion.com. This is Jeff, one of your podcast co-hosts, and you can follow me on X, Twitter, whatever they're calling it these days, at Talkin' ACC Sports. That's at TalkinACCSports. The podcast moderator is Matthew, and you can follow him at ASD_HokieSmash. That's at ASD_HokieSmash. I'm going to turn it over to you, Matthew, as we introduce our guest and our X account that you're on most of the time these days. And I see our guest is on the line. We're ready to go.
We're absolutely ready to go. This is Matthew. You can follow me most of the time now on Twitter at AllSportsDACC. That's the Twitter account, the X account. I'm sorry, I'm always going to call it Twitter. I don't care what the owner thinks now. We'll always call it Twitter here. We're old school. You can follow that. You can follow me there most of the time now. Again, that's at AllSportsDACC. This is the longest running independent ACC podcast in the United States. This is the All Sports Discussion ACC podcast. Jeff, this is our 500th episode tonight. A huge milestone.
Yeah. And we got a super special guest joining us.
We do. And he's been a friend of the site in so many ways. He retweets our work. He reads our work. He's been a guest host on this podcast before. He's been a guest on this podcast before. He's been a blog panelist with us before. He's done so many things with us. Welcome back, James Curl. Let me just tell you a little bit about James. You can follow him on Twitter at James Curl. That's at JamesCurle. He does work at Pack Pride. He's been an NC State podcaster for more than a decade. He just does outstanding work. He's an outstanding creator, and we're really happy to have him as a return guest on our show as we preview 2024 NC State football. James, before we start, tell us a bit about yourself and anything that you want to plug now. Thanks again for joining us on this milestone episode on this Sunday evening. We appreciate you spending your...
Yeah, breaking off 500. That's awesome. Happy to be here for the milestone episode, and I appreciate it. It's been a year of NC State sports excellence, and so I'm happy that I could be here for number 500 and talk some NC State football. You covered a lot of the highlights there in the intro. Very kind, and I appreciate it. Started podcasting back in 2011, so hard to believe, but been doing this for 13 years now, and I don't know. It's 500 episodes, so it'd be a hell of a research project, but I don't know when my first appearance was with you guys, but it certainly was a few hundred shy of 500. I appreciate you guys reaching out as always over the years, and it's always a good hang with you guys.
So James, I mean, we're going to call this segment NC State goodness. Because yes, there's a whole lot of goodness going on right now at NC State, multiple sports, but most recently, certainly the 2023-2024 men's and women's basketball seasons just went outstanding for the Pack. Reflect for it.
Well, I mean, it was incredible. I don't know that. It's funny. I it's hard not to think of it as like a once in a lifetime thing, but at the same time, you hope it's not a once in a lifetime thing. You hope this is the start of us, continuing the ball rolling for both programs. To make the Final Four in the same year for both programs, you win an ACC title, the first ACC men's basketball title in 37 years, well before you guys started your podcast. It's been just an incredible season. It was one of those marches where it's just it was almost like every day brought about some kind of new fun moment, whether it was a, you know, a win along that magical run for the men's side, the women's team having such success. Just really was a fantastic thing to experience. You almost in a way felt a little bit bad for the women's team having to share the spotlight with the men's team. You know, they make their first Final Four since 98. Certainly, you know, a much more recent Final Four than the men's team, but the men's team with DJ Burns and, you know, the winning the 5 games in 5 days to win the ACC title, just dominated a lot of the headlines as well. You know, the women's team deserved their own accolades for the work they did. I mean, just, you know, they ran into obviously just an incredibly dominant South Carolina team in the Final Four. You know, no shame in losing to them. The Gamecocks are just a machine. But, you know, and then you lose to Purdue on the men's side against Zach Edey. I thought we played a pretty good game against Zach Edey, all things considered. We just couldn't shoot. You know, we had along those 5 games in the ACC tournament up in D.C., and then the early portion of the NCAA tournament to get to the Final Four, we always had some clutch shooting come through, whether it was Michael O'Connell or, you know, just you were getting contributions from a whole bunch of different guys. But, you know, DJ Burns was just a fun story. You know, it was so neat to be a fan of the team and the player that kind of captured the heart of the tournament. I mean, yes, UConn was just unstoppable and Zach Edey was probably the best player in the tournament, but there was no one more beloved in this NCAA tournament than DJ Burns. And it was so cool to just see him become the face and the star of this year in the NCAA tournament. And I don't know, I had to pinch myself multiple times, and I don't know that anything will ever compare to 1983, but it was nice to get a little bit of a taste of what that must have felt like.
Definitely, definitely. I'll just say quickly that, you know, when the Pac men's team won all those games at what is now the I forget the Capital One Center. I keep forgetting the name. It was the Verizon Center, and now I believe it's still the Capital One Center. The Pack had won more games at the Wizards at the Wizards place than the Wizards had won.
Yeah, no. Sorry to show up the pro team that shares.
Pretty
that
ridiculous,
arena. But you know, we had to do what we had to do.
It was pretty impressive, Jeff.
All right, thanks, Matthew. James, as we turn our attention to football after, you know, that wonderful spring by the NC State basketball teams, what are some of the major strengths coming back for the 2024 NC State football team?
Well, you know, it's funny because heading into the 2023 season, I think a lot of the discussion that we had was, you know, we felt like we had a pretty good incoming transfer quarterback in Brennan Armstrong, you know, an experienced offensive line. And we just didn't know if we were going to have any wide receivers who could play. And, you know, you flash forward a year and suddenly it looks like the wide receiver room is going to be one of the strengths of this team. You know, Kevin Concepcion is just, he's a star. He is, so fast, so electric. He's probably the most electric wide receiver we've had at State since Torrey Holt. You know, he's a guy that if you get him the ball in space and he does such a good job of getting separation, you feel like any touch he gets could go to the house. You know, he's not as big as Torrey was, but, you know, he's just so fast and so tough. And, you know, Robert and I's system being as creative as it is, you know, he found a lot of different ways to get, you know, KC some touches. I probably would want him to not have to run the ball as much. And I feel like we'll get to that when we talk about incoming transfers. I don't think he's going to have to shoulder the rushing game load as much as he did last year. But, if there's one player on this team that's kind of a bona fide star that's coming back, at least on the offensive side, it's going to be Casey Concepcion. I'm excited to see what he can do. And you know, there's some other wide receivers that have been added via this portal that will, I think, take some of the load off of his shoulders. And, you know, if you think about, you know, what's, you know, a defense has to face, if it's just Kevin Concepcion, it's a little bit easier to game plan. But if you've got a guy like Noah Rogers, who's transferred in from Ohio State, and, you know, some other pieces that we have that, you know, like a Justin Jolie, who's going to be a tight end, but probably a little be more like a Rondé Gadsden type, like we saw at Syracuse when Anai was there. Defenses are going to be hard pressed to devote as much defensive resources to stopping Casey Concepcion this year as they, you know, did last year. So I think Anai has a lot more tools at his disposal on the, you know, wide receiver front. You know, defensively, you know, it's not quite as stacked, you know, like last year. Obviously, the linebacker group was just incredible, headlined by Peyton Wilson and Isaiah Moore. Both of those guys are gone. But, you know, I think you're going to see some depth at the cornerback position. Getting Aiden White to come back, you know, deciding to return to NC State was huge. He's a guy that is just going to be, you know, he's you're probably not going to hear a whole lot about him in terms of, you know, interceptions or turnovers forced, because I don't know that he's going to get a whole lot of balls thrown his way. He'll be our guy shutting the other team's best wide receiver down. But I feel like that whole defensive backfield is going to be pretty solid as well.
All right, James, let's go to the flip side here. What are some of the major weaknesses that NC State has going into the season? In other words, what do you think the Wolfpack will be working on in August before the first game? And what are the questions that you think have to be resolved for the Wolfpack to have a successful season?
Well, I mean, you know, you lose a guy like Peyton Wilson, it's hard. You know, I think that you're going to see at the linebacker position, probably there will be some, I don't want to say, you know, falling a step behind. But, you know, I think Peyton's absence is going to be noticeable. You know, he's a guy that you just can't replace with one guy. There may be some opportunities to kind of replace him by committee. You know, but I think the linebacker core will be tested. And I think there's a potential for that room to take a step back. Now, they did try to address it some in the transfer portal, but, you know, it's kind of like if your linebacker crew goes from like an A or an A-plus unit even, and they step back to like a B or maybe a B-minus, you still got a pretty good crew back there and still have plenty of potential to grow. And, you know, the new pieces that they've added, I think we're going to see how well they mesh. But, you know, there was some depth there that I think started to show out. And, you know, I'm trying to think back to, you know, like you got, you know, guys like Devon Betty, who played pretty well. You know, I think Sean Brown, if I remember correctly, is being converted from kind of a strong safety type down to more of like a speedster at linebacker. You know, I just talked about some of the depth in the defensive backfield. You know, Sean Brown is a guy at safety last year. He was just a hitter. He was a guy who came up, who would, you know, just played really physical. And as a safety, obviously he had the ability to cover guys in space. So I could definitely see him getting some run as a weak side linebacker this year. That guy that has to cover someone in the slot, play a little bit more out in space. but still have the ability to be physical. I think there's certainly potential for that. I that's on the defensive side, probably an area where I would look at some weakness. You know, there's still questions about our offensive line offensively. I feel pretty good about, you know, Grayson McCall coming in at quarterback. I'm not really worried about the quarterback position. You know, you could maybe say that, but this is probably true for every team, you know, beyond your starter, what sort of depth do you have behind your starting quarterback? You know, unless you're a blue blood or cream of the crop, you know, like a Georgia or Texas or something like that, you know, you're probably not going to have two bona fide 4 or 5 star players, where if you're, you know, your number one goes in, you basically turn to 1B. You hope for Grayson's health this year at the quarterback position, because I'm not sure there's a whole lot behind him. But, you know, running back, I feel pretty good about. We talked about wide receiver, and I think our tight end room got really good with the addition of just Justin Jolie from Connecticut. So the weakness on the offensive side would be offensive line. We've got some returning production there, but, you know, you lose a guy at center and Dylan McMahon, you know, breaking in a new center coming into every year, that's always a little bit of a tricky proposition. So, you know, as far as weakness on the offensive side, I'd say it's probably offensive line.
All right, James, who are some of the new recruits or players from the transfer portal that have impressed you the most? And are there any that you think will get major playing time right away?
Well, I've mentioned his name already a couple times, Justin Jolie. I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be an impact player right away. You know, he seems like a perfect fit for Robert and I's offense. He's big, he's strong, he's probably not the best blocking tight end, but he's just a guy, like I mentioned, you know, Rondae Gadsden at Syracuse, just a guy that will be literally head and shoulders above the person most likely designated to have to cover him. And Anai is so good at putting you in mismatches against a player like that, that, you know, gosh, I just think back 2 years to when Anai cooked this with Gadsden, that, you know, it's so funny that I think Doran said it last year when he brought in Anai was, you know, he wanted to bring Robert in as his coordinator just because of how badly he beat us. And so much of that was what he did with Gadsden. So if we can have that same kind of moment multiple times with Justin Jolie, I think that we'll be causing a lot of headaches for teams. And then, you know, the I think the biggest improvement will be at the running back position. You know, you add Jordan Waters from Duke, he is so smooth. We saw him in the spring game. He's just a guy that makes the right read, and NC State last recent years, we really haven't had like a huge explosive running back, but we know we had a guy, I don't know why I'm blanking on his name, but you know, he'd been in the program for a long time. It'll come to me probably here in just a second, but had kind of, you know, bit his time and waited for things to play out, and just never, every time he got touches, you could see that he was running at his full speed, but it just wasn't quite explosive enough, and he had a tendency to kind of run straight into the tackle. Certainly tough. And again, I apologize for not remembering his name right off, but Waters is kind of the opposite. You know, he's smooth, he's patient, knows how to avoid contact, and just there were so many times in that spring game that we saw him in last year against us when we played Duke that, you know, he waits for the hole, and then when the hole presents itself, he shoots through it. Not a lot of wasted effort and energy, strong, and just super productive. So, you know, we kind of live in this new era now where guys are transferring from not only within conference, but you know, within area code, you know, Duke being up the road only about 30 minutes. If you told me 20 years ago that we'd be getting transfers in from, you know, Wake Forest and Duke, I'd told you you were probably crazy. But that's the era we live in now. So I would look for NC State's running game to be better improved, even with the kind of the question marks at offensive line. I think Jordan Waters is going to be a guy that if he stays healthy, he's going to be able to get production on his own. And then, you know, at wide receiver, you know, you bring in a guy like Noah Rogers, who was highly recruited and comes to NC State from Ohio State. You know, I think it's interesting. I made this point on our show this week that I think there was a lot of speculation that the portal was going to be bad for a lot of teams like NC State because all of their good players would filter upwards to the elite programs. And, you know, we saw that with like Sam Hartman going, you know, to Notre Dame, and we've seen other players that have gone upwards. But I think what we've also seen is a lot of programs in that kind of second tier have benefited from players who were highly touted coming out of high school, went to the program of their dreams, and then just couldn't find the field. They couldn't find their way on the depth chart to get the playing time that they want. And maybe they realized that the dream school that they had always wanted to play for, the team that was, you know, where they had envisioned being a key component on a national championship team, they realized that maybe that's not the most important thing. Maybe coming home or playing a little bit closer to home and being a productive player on a team that can make some noise like NC State is an attractive option. So I think that's why you've seen, you know, we've got a couple of guys that have, you know, headed to NC State in this portal class from Ohio State as examples. Guys who are certainly talented, but are just looking for a better opportunity and you know, I'm hoping that the ACC sticks around for a few more years or longer, but, you know, while the ACC is still here, I think NC State has a pretty good chance to contend for a league title. And I think guys like Noah Rogers are going to be a part of that.
Good stuff there, James. As we move along here in the podcast, James, question, what are two of the most important games for NC State this year, you know, and give us your early analysis of those games right now, and then give us what you think NC State's overall record will be.
Well, so I have already kind of unofficially called my shot this year that I think this is the year that NC State and more specifically Dave Doran gets that 10-win monkey off his back. I think that the schedule really lines up well for NC State. You know, we don't really have the murderer's row, certainly with the, you know, the death of divisions. You know, there's not the specter of playing, you know, Clemson and Florida State and then Louisville in a good year for them, where, you know, you feel like you gotta, you know, really hold your breath. And these aren't the Wake Forest teams of the last, you know, 3 or 4 years where you had Sam Hartman plus a lot of dangerous offensive weapons. So, you know, I think there's a real good chance. In fact, I would be a little bit surprised if NC State finishes the year having not gotten double-digit wins. You know, you get – I'm just looking at, you know, the list of conference opponents. You do have the big game at Clemson. That's going to be one of my two. But, you know, you get Wake at home, Syracuse at home. You do have a road trip to Cal conference game, question mark, but you know, you host Stanford and then Duke minus, you know, Mike Elko. We'll see how Manny Diaz does, former member of the NC State football staff, by the way, under Chuck Amato. And then, you know, you travel to Georgia Tech. They'll be an interesting team. And then you have the road game against Carolina to end the year. But, you know, State has fared well against Carolina in Chapel Hill over the years. So a little bit unusual there that you're ending the season with a bye week on the 16th of November and then two road games. Your last home game is going to be that home game against Duke on November 9th. I think there's a good chance that NC State does get 10 wins. But to answer the question of the two most important games, they're both going to come in September. It's the, you know, second game of the year at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte against Tennessee. NC State has had several cracks at beating an SEC opponent. And we just haven't quite been able to beat that bugaboo. We faced Dak Prescott when he was at Mississippi State. We got beat by Deebo Samuel and the rest of the South Carolina team. He opened the game in Charlotte when he was there with a kickoff return against us that doomed us in that game. There's just, again, these little nuggets in footnotes in the Dave Doran tenure where it's like, you know, how is it that he's not ever beaten an SEC opponent? Obviously, it's hard to get on an SEC schedule if it's a team other than South Carolina. So being in a position to host Tennessee in Charlotte, you presume that you're going to have a little bit more of a crowd representation than the Volunteers, though there are plenty of Tennessee fans in North Carolina. If you beat the Volunteers in that game on Saturday, September 7th, you know, you really start to think that, okay, this could be a special season because presumably you beat Western Carolina in that first game. If you don't stomp Western Carolina in your tune-up in game one, that would be a cause for concern. But presuming you beat Western Carolina, if you can get past Tennessee, you know, you then host Louisiana Tech. You could be 3-0 heading to Clemson on the 21st of September. And then if you can beat those two orange opponents, Tennessee and Clemson, then you really feel like, okay, we might have the potential for a tremendous, spectacular season. You know, you'll be happy with a split. And obviously, if you have to split, you probably want to get the conference game against Clemson. But I think State's in a good position to beat both of those teams. And if they win both, then, you know, it's going to be hard at that point to squelch potential playoff talk because the rest of the schedule from that point forward is very manageable.
Right, Matthew, I'm going to turn it over to you for the last couple questions in the podcast.
I'm actually a little surprised, James, that you didn't call that November 30th matchup with North Carolina a home game, since a lot of those folks are going to be looking at the big screen TV in the stadium for basketball updates and they're watching basketball games. I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm not. Okay. All right. So what?
No, it's any and all shots you want to take at Carolina's expense. I'm here for it.
I just derailed the show.
This is the show.
On the 500th podcast. Okay, no, seriously. I mean, you talked about it quite a bit at length there, but really, where would you say NC State fans are now with the state of the program? It's gotten to the point where, I think you can depend on NC State to win eight, nine games a year. I think that's really, you know, there's a certain consistency that I'm seeing from NC State, right? That it's not necessarily NC State bad, but certainly, you know, NC State consistency, but wanting to get to that next, people perhaps yearning more, you kind of said it yourself, wanting to get to that next level of 10, that sort of thing. Is that kind of what I'm seeing here in terms of what people are looking for? But
Well, you know, I think we touch on this question each time I come on, and it's interesting if we just zeroed in on this one question over the years, it'd probably be interesting to gauge those experiences or answers. It would probably be the first few times were probably like, well, you know, we've seen some positivity. And then probably the second or third time was like, well, you know, Dave's in a hot seat position. And now it's Dave's locked in. I mean, he is the winningest coach now in NC State history. You know, he's fortified his position as far as his time here, you know, barring just a monumental collapse of the program in the coming years. I can't see him being forced out. It would have to be, you know, I guess that's not too hard to imagine that, you know, things could collapse. You know, you look at Mack Brown, people were singing his praises just a few years ago. And now, you know, time comes for us all. But, you know, at this point in time, you know, I think I heard that, you know, CBS Sports had named him the 16th best, you know, college football coach among Power Five teams. You know, he's well respected. He's built a program that's is kind of the model of consistency. You know, I've got his record pulled up here. And since 2015, he's had only one season where he had less than 7 wins. You know, 7-6, 7-6, 9-4, 9-4. He did have that 2019 season that was just wrecked with injuries. And then in the COVID year, when everything was so crazy, he bounced back with an 8-win season, maybe one of the best coaching jobs of his tenure, and then followed it up with a 9-win season, another 8-win season, and then a 9-win season. You know, the 21 and 23 seasons both had 6 conference wins. You know, and I hate that he didn't get that Pop-Tarts Bowl win to give him number 10. It's a shame. I really felt like we were in a good spot to win that game. But, you know, Kansas State, they surprised me and I think a lot of folks who just assumed that because they had lost their offensive coordinator, you know, we didn't know who this, you know, upstart phenom quarterback was going to be for K-State. But I think Avery, what's his last name? Doesn't matter. But, you know, he was just tough to get a handle on. And nowadays with bowls and the portal and everything else, it's so hard to judge a team or even expect. Like, if you're a gambler, why would you even bet on bowls? I mean, good God, it's just a crapshoot, every single one of those. But, you know, nevertheless, I think this year is a really good spot for Dave to win 10. There's a chance he could go undefeated in the league if he can beat Clemson. Even if he loses that Clemson game, I think he's got a decent shot of only losing one conference game, being that Clemson game, because the rest of the schedule was just so favorable. You don't face Florida State. You don't face, you know, like Miami or some of the other preseason favorites. I'm sure that by the time we, you know, look at November, we might be surprised at how well Stanford or Cal is doing, or maybe Georgia Tech is surprising teams. Who knows? Maybe Carolina is having one of their better seasons, even though they don't have a five-star Heisman hopeful quarterback. And that, I've seen stranger things, but I just really feel like this is a year where Dave gets that 10th win. I hope it comes as part of, you know, being a team that gets invited into the 12-team playoff. It would just be kind of a nice cap to this magical 2024 that started with the basketball team. And, you know, the ACC, the baseball team is, you know, they swept Wake Forest, a top 10 team, to finish with the third seed in the baseball standings, excuse me, heading into the tournament coming up this week. So their season is yet to be written, but it's looking pretty good coming down the stretch. So I'm hoping for a great 2024, and yeah, Dave's locked in at this point.
Open microphone time. I'm going to use my open microphone to ask you a question, James, and then we can get to your open microphone. Here's my question for you. Who is going to win tomorrow night, Edmonton or Vancouver?
Well, here's the thing. I you know, for as diehard as I am about NC State sports, I'm very much a bandwagon fan when it comes to the Canes. Like, I am all in on the Canes and really felt like they had a really great shot of advancing past the Rangers, but, you know, Shesterkin happened, and you just can't go down 3-0 against any team and expect to pull it out. And when they were eliminated, I was like, well, gosh, I guess I can stop following the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I mean, I will tell you who I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for Vancouver, and it's a dumb reason, but it's because the podcasts that I listen to, there are a couple of Canadian comedians who live in Vancouver, and one of them is a huge Canucks fan. So for no other reason other than I just want that guy to have a moment of happiness, kind of like I enjoyed with NC State basketball this year, I hope he gets to see his Canucks advance and have a magical season as well.
Fair enough. And Brock Besser, University of North Dakota, is playing for Vancouver. Nice. There you go.
That gives me another rooting interest.
Very good, because you have a University of North Dakota alum there down at Carolina too as well. It makes me feel pretty old, because he's the son of a former LA Kings player. James, what do you got for your open mic?
All I'm going to say in my open mic segment is just congrats to you guys for 500 episodes. You guys have brought me on back in the days of the old Riddick and Reynolds podcast. And again, that was a show I started back in 2011. I did that for 5 years and then took a break. And then Corey brought me on to be a co-host on his show. We've now been doing that show for about 5 years. And I think I finished with either just over 200 episodes of the old show, and we're in the 200s now on this show, and you guys have doubled up that total combined between those two shows on your show. So seriously impressive for you guys to hit 500. It's always fun. It's an interesting experience doing the, you know, I don't want to peel the curtain back too much, but there's a countdown, and there's a Google Doc involved, and it is a unique way to go about doing it. And it's always like a fun kind of cloak and dagger is not the right term, but it's a little bit of a fun experience whenever you're trying to get everybody coordinated. It's like synchronize your watches kind of deal. I enjoy it. So, I think it's just really neat that you guys have this long running, thing. I hope, if for nothing else, I hope for y'all's sake that the ACC does continue to exist, because if the ACC dies, then what happens to you guys? I don't want your show. I mean, your show could quite literally outlast the league that you cover. I hope that's not too nihilistic, but, I guess it's also a reality that we're having to face with Florida State and Clemson and potentially Carolina and others wanting to leave. But again, congrats and kudos to you guys for 500 episodes.
And thank you for the kind words. Thank you for being a big part of this podcast, James. We've been on so many times. You brought up that earlier in the podcast. I'll have to go back and research and find out when the earliest date was that you're on, and I'll come back later in a tweet to you all. But thanks again for the kind words, James. We really appreciate it. Jeff Friend.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. This week, and we said this on another podcast earlier today, this week is ACC baseball tournament time. And in that one, we talked about where some of the teams were looking for their NCAA hopes. Here, I want to look at the pools here. Pool A is number one, North Carolina. Number eight seed, Wake Forest. Number 12, Pitt. Pool B, number two, Clemson. Number seven, Louisville. Number 11, Miami. You got Louisville, you know, on the bubble. You know, if they were to come out of Pool B there, probably get themselves into the NCAA tournament. Without that, they'd be right there on that bubble trying to get in. Pool C, James's NC State Wolfpack coming fresh off a sweep of Wake Forest and, you know, looking to get into a top eight regional host, I would say. I think they've just about locked up a regional host, but they're looking to enhance that, you know, in the ACC tournament. You've got number six Duke in there, who's fallen off of that regional host positioning, trying to get back into it. And number 10, Virginia Tech, who's, you know, on the bubble, but probably out at this point. And if they could come out of their pool, would definitely help their chances. Pool D, you've got Virginia, number five, Florida State, number four, Virginia, and number nine, Georgia Tech. That is the deepest pod of the four, with three teams that are likely to be in the NCAA tournament. Georgia Tech, probably not quite a lock yet, but they should be feeling pretty good, especially after finishing 500 in the league. So Tuesday starts with Miami, Louisville at 11 a.m., Georgia Tech, Florida State at 3, Virginia Tech and Duke at 7 p.m. All these games are going to be on the ACC network, and looking forward to that tournament, as the ACC is probably 8 or 9 teams deep of NCAA caliber teams just behind the SEC. With college football or college softball in the NCAA tournament, Duke and Florida State have advanced to super regionals. Florida State's going to have to go to reigning national champions Oklahoma, out there in Norman, Oklahoma. So it's going to be, you know, a tall task for them to advance. But, you know, that's why they play the games. And then Duke will be going to Missouri in a 10-7 matchup. So lots of really good ACC sports action this week. And as far as like the 500th episode, Matthew, just want to say I have definitely enjoyed these past years hosting with you. You're kind of the guiding force and setting everything up until we get to the show. And, you know, like James said, who knows what the future's gonna hold. You know, I think we're still gonna be, you know, be ACC podcasting for sure for at least a couple more years. Who knows after that? But the blog site's name is allsportsdiscussion.com, so we don't have to change that. But wherever our teams that we root for, you know, we're gonna figure out something with that. But I've definitely enjoyed working with you all these years, Matthew, and all the times, James, that you've come on and you know, helped us out, been on the show, guest hosted, and all that you've done to help us out over the years.
I appreciate you guys reaching out. It's been a blast, and I too hope that we'll get at least a couple more years of ACC discussion, and then we'll have to shift to all sports, because these teams are going to be scattered all different directions, I fear. But I'm hoping, you know, that the ACC can persist on in some shape or form, you know, because NC State and Everett Case all the way back into the 1950s, you know, played such a huge pivotal role in the formation of the league back then. I feel like every NC State fan that knows the history of NC State athletics feels a very close tie to the league's history. And, you know, they don't call it the Everett Case trophy, given to the MVP of the tournament every year for no good reason. It's because he was instrumental in the forming of the league. And, if there's any reason why, you know, people ask, well, what does NC State care about staying in a dying league? It's I think, you know, for folks like myself, it's because this is the home that we really had a large part in building back in the 50s. And, certainly I wasn't alive back then, but you know, it's been the league that I grew up watching, and you know, the classic example of wheeling the card into the classrooms here in North Carolina to watch the tournament on, you know, quarterfinal Friday. And, it would be a very sad thing for the league to pass away, in the name of greed and expansion and trying to create these two super leagues that, the TV networks are trying to form. What I fear happening is that the super leagues will kill off the remaining three. Well, they've already killed off the Pac-12. So the remaining two power leagues will die or fragment or splinter, and then they'll get too big. And then suddenly it's like, well, we probably shouldn't have done that, so let's restructure in some shape or form. And then the league will be dead, and it'll just be some new league that gets created when it didn't need to be killed off in the first place. But I don't know. We'll see. It'll be an interesting coming decade or two. But I have enjoyed being a fan of NC State within the ACC over the course of my lifetime.
James, thank you so much for joining us on the All Sports Discussion ACC podcast. We loved having you come on the show. Thank you for all your kind words and your support of the podcast and our site. And Jeff, I've enjoyed getting to 500 with you. You've been very supportive of whatever I want to post on this on allsportsdiscussion.com. I pretty much have free reign, so I appreciate that. And it's been a great ride for us, and I want it to continue. So thanks so much, James, and thank you for spending your Sunday night with us. And Jeff, thank you so much. You guys have a great week.
Yep. I'll see you guys on episode 1000.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right.